Welcome, coaches and fellow split talkers. Thanks for joining us again on the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder, the Coach Development Officer at Basketball Victoria. Joined with me is the High Performance Coach for the Vic Country Women, Zoe Carr. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to this one.
Excellent. If you've managed to find us, you've probably done so via iTunes or Spotify. And once again, if you are able to like, share, retweet, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, it would be greatly appreciated on our end to help grow the audience. If you need us, you can get us using the hashtag TalkingSplit on Twitter in particular, or you can shoot us an email through on the Basketball Victoria email addresses. Zoe, what's your Twitter handle?
@ZoeCarr85.
Excellent. And I'm @RobCoulter if you need anything. Terrible news during the week. Once again, unfortunately, that Victoria has gone into a six-week lockdown, which unfortunately has put a pin in the Big V and VJBL season. So a bit of an average time for everyone here. Those of you in other states, I hope you're enjoying your return to sport. Unfortunately, it looks like we're a little way off from ours at the moment. So it does mean more time in the house and things like that. And we're probably going to have to return to some form of online training once again for the athletes, but hopefully we can get through this, get out of it the other side and be in a fairly good position.
You know, it's really disappointing. We were ever so close to getting back to doing what we love and getting the kids back on court, but, you know, right now is not a time to be pointing fingers or placing blame. We've just got to do what we need to do and be leaders in our communities as coaches of athletes. We're used to being leaders, and now's the time we need to be doing that to make sure that everyone in our community or that we are a part of are doing the right thing, so we can just get on top of this thing for once and for all and get back to doing what we love.
And it is a little bit of a twilight zone, I think, for a lot of coaches where it's like, we're on, we're off, we're on, we're off. And so it is really difficult. And now hopefully with the confirmation that the seasons are cancelled, we can sort of move on and say, well, look, we're not trying to learn offenses or anything like that. We're trying to focus on the skill development and in particular the mental health of our players, which I think is a really important side of things as well.
Yeah, huge. Staying in touch with the kids and just making sure that they're okay. You know, we have been through this before, so it won't be as much of a shock, I don't think, this time around, but it is still very deflating. So
it won't be a shock, it'll be a groan.
Yeah, exactly.
We're back onto this again.
Yeah, so making sure that we stay on top of the athletes and make sure and keeping in touch with them and just showing that you care and that there's somebody else there for them to talk to should they need to is really, really important right now.
And not just the players, but also the coaching community continue to stay in touch with each other.
Sure.
As well. It's, you know, a coach without a team is a really strange spot to be in. So please do make sure that you continue to keep contact with each other. It might be a text message or a phone call, whatever the case may be. You're more than welcome to shoot any emails through to the Basketball Victoria email addresses, and I'll happily get back to you with whatever, even if it's just a catch up over Zoom or something like that. And, you know, I'm happy to talk basketball or FIFA or, you know, preferred pizza toppings or something along those lines for anyone that potentially needs it as well. So please do reach out if you do need help in those situations, because we do want to try and provide that as best we can.
For sure.
As we mentioned last week, we are lucky to have our special guest on the show this week, Katrina Hibbert, who is the head coach of the Sydney Uni Flames. Represented Victoria as a player and as a coach, had a great playing career at LSU, drafted by the Seattle Storm and played in the WNBA, a player for the Ballin Boomers, worked for the Junior NBA Academy, assistant coach with the Melbourne Boomers, and now the current head coach of the Sydney Uni Flames. Katrina Hibbert, welcome to the Talking Split podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm happy to be here.
We're under very strict instructions to now refer to you as Frog from here on in for the rest of the podcast. We'll start off with your playing career. You made the decision earlier than most, because we do have a lot of kids that go over and play college basketball, but you went over a year earlier and played high school as well. How did you come to that decision to go across earlier?
Well, it actually comes back to the great Ken Cole. Some of you might know who Ken is. I was actually going over to America on a USA basketball tour and really enjoyed my experience on that trip, and decided at that point I actually wanted to go play college. I'd seen Cheryl Swoops scored 40 and 20 in the, you know, championship game back in the early 90s, and I just thought, this is such an amazing experience and opportunity, and just saw it as something that I really wanted to do. And so when I went on the high school trip, Ken organised and arranged for myself and four other Australians, actually. So Clarissa Tomlinson, Kate Whelan and myself as three females, all Basketball Victorian representatives at the state level. And John McKithen and another guy. So we all actually ended up going playing high school at five different high schools in Louisiana. So we saw that as a great opportunity to be recruited and go through the high school pathway. So obviously we'd have more access and more visibility to a lot of different colleges to be able to have choices from.
Awesome. And how did you pick LSU? Was it just that was where you were playing originally and that was the goal all along, or did you have other offers from other places?
No, I had other offers. I think I had such a wonderful experience as an exchange student living in Louisiana and in Denham Springs where I went to high school. You know, I had a beautiful family that I lived with and was really embraced within the community. We went and won 37-0, went on one state championship. So I was pretty heavily recruited, particularly down south. I did visit St. John's in New York, and I must confess, Kate and I actually went up, and that was probably more just, it was over New Year's Eve and we wanted New Year's Eve in Times Square, so that was too good of an opportunity to pass up. So if I'm being honest, that was probably under false pretenses. But, yeah, I just got a really good vibe wanting to stay in Louisiana around people that had embraced me, and LSU was sort of in a position where they were starting to rebuild, and played for Sue Gunter, who was an American coach, Pokey Chapman, who's coached at the WNBA level, Bob Stark, who's a very well-known assistant coach in America. So I was very fortunate in the coaching staff that I was going into to play for as well, and there was opportunity to play. I think I came off the bench as a first rotation my first year and started every other game from my sophomore year on, so just lots of opportunities.
I think that's really important. A lot of athletes make the mistake of, you know, they'll go to the biggest D1 school or whatever it might be and then basically get warehoused for 4 years. I think it's a really important message about picking somewhere that you know you're going to get an opportunity and get to play.
Yeah, and you know, Australians are so well developed at an early age. I think we do a really good job of it, you know, fundamental development. So, you know, we are embraced when we get to America because I think we are more advanced in that area and then we can grow from there. You know, I think some of my college teammates came in and didn't quite have the same skill set, but they developed through the college pathway as well. So, yeah, you've got to play, find the right system, find the right coach, because, you know, you want to stay there for 4 years and you know, you build trust with coaches. And I think we'll probably get onto this a little bit later that, you know, everyone's looking for quick success, but it's a process. And, you know, that's where I think the college program is successful, because you do have 4 years to develop and process and go through the process and build that trust with your coaches over those years. So, yeah, it is important you get the right mix.
Do you think coaches, I mean, back then, you know, when you signed, you likely had your coach for 4 years and that was the way it was back then. Now there are a lot of coaches that are just jumping around the place or maybe getting fired, but they're moving on. They're signing players and they're moving on within a year of, you know, athletes getting over there. Do you think that's one of the major changes between college in your day and college now? And what would you, I suppose, recommend for athletes that are looking to head over?
Yeah, I think, you know, we do live in a bit of a disposable society. Coaches, well, they say there's two types of coaches, one waiting to be hired and one waiting to be fired. So currently hired. Now I just wait for the firing. But yeah, I mean, you do, because this is sort of what I want to do in my, you know, I've had one season of coaching here in Sydney. I want to establish myself in Sydney and build a culture that athletes can go through the process of their professional career, whether it be through the DP level or, you know, first opportunity in the league or established players, trying to build that pathway and transition from season to season, similar to what the college system is. So I think it's important, you know, not to just, you know, we're based on wins and losses and there's more to it. And I think it's important that we go back to those things that are important. Hopefully after COVID-19, there's a bit of a reset around that. We understand the importance of investing in people a little bit more rather than saying, oh, well, they haven't had success, so let's just move them on. You know, valuing people and developing people and players and coaches and building cultures. I think hopefully we can get back to that.
That's fantastic. So drafted by the Seattle Storm, scored their first ever points, we see. No chance you were passing.
Well, I have to say, I know I was trying to think back to this. So let me tell you, first things first, I don't think anybody knows I was from Australia because I'd always said from LSU. So as a first Australian there, Well, I think it was off a steal. I was trying to, I had to think back 20 years now. So I'm pretty certain I stole the ball and that was a fast break opportunity. So in my defense, one probably, never going to pass it. But yeah, I think, you know, I actually didn't know that was a statistic until Tully Bevilacqua was playing over there. And she was like, you know, you're a trivia question. And I was like, what for? I thought it might have been for, you know, most losses in the season because we went 6-26. But it was, scoring the first 2 points for Seattle Storm. My one claim to fame as an athlete.
I feel like there's holes in this story, Frog, because you playing defense, I'm not sure.
Right place, right time.
Well, let's get to defense. I think it was an off-ball steal. There's two, two types of defenders.
Okay, jump in the lane. Yes, I'll give you that.
Thank you, yes. You have good help side defenders. Just because you're sometimes a good on-ball defender doesn't mean you're a good off-ball defender.
So what was the whole WNBA experience like for you? It's, you know, for a lot of people, like, they don't realise that that wasn't an established league at that point. Like, it's straight into it and playing straight away. What was it like? Is your experience?
I think I was really naive to it when I look back on it in terms of just young and didn't really appreciate or a bit, you know, in awe and immature around it all in terms of, it still hadn't, it's not where it is now. We didn't have as many coaches and all the technology and all those sorts of things. But I think back now, like, what an amazing experience. Straight from college, drafted number 57, fourth round pick. I think I was the only fourth round pick to make a team. And then, I think the first game, and I was, you know, the introduction where, and I started the first game, obviously, and I, you get introduced to run down the stairs into the crowd, and it was, you know, a very exciting thing for the city. I think the Seattle Sonics had folded, so become the major sporting basketball team in Seattle. So, you know, it was an amazing experience. And then, you know, I guess I didn't appreciate it because you go from college is sort of semi-professional. You've got the big stadiums. You know, you train every day and then you go into the arenas and you're playing outside of arenas and you go to restaurants and you get food paid for and you become somewhat of a celebrity in that town. It was very great experience. Met some wonderful people and had a really good time and learned a lot from it. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to sustain it at that level, but I had other successes elsewhere.
And a great legacy with the Seattle Storm as well, like with Australian basketball, the amount of basketballers that have gone through there, and obviously Ezzy Magbigger's over there at the moment, which is a great link, but just a phenomenal culture that has gone through that association all the way through the years as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's a testament. I think Seattle and Melbourne, sort of Sydney, are very similar in their in types of culture and community and lifestyle. So I think it's a credit to Australian basketball and what they recognise in us as athletes and people, that they do recruit Australians and they like our approach to the game, the way we play the game and our skill sets. And obviously, you know, Lauren was drafted the next season and she's, you know, was the main player and marquee player. But Susie Bakovich has been there, Abby Bishop, Jenna O'Hay, Belinda Snell, Ezzy. So the list goes on. I think, you know, besides Phoenix as one of the other probably major influences for Australian players, Sydney, Seattle's, Australians have had a big influence in that city, and I think they enjoy the Australian humour and personalities that come in.
You mentioned about when you started, there wasn't the technology and there wasn't the amount of coaches and all those sort of things, and to what there is now. Do you think that's maybe changed the athlete as well in terms of what they expect, what they don't expect? You know, I think we can all agree there's been a change in athletes from, and I think when we were playing Frog, the players of 10, 15 years before that were probably, you know, saying back in our day we didn't do what they did. So there has been a change. But do you think the technology and I guess the amount that's now available to athletes has contributed to that?
Oh, for sure. I think you know, the access to watching games, I think they've become better students of the game. There's a lot more individual development coaches out there. Again, you know, technology can give you so many statistics. You can go whatever direction you want with it. You know, I just think back to, again, maybe my naivety around, is that the word? Is that how you say it? You know, people I didn't probably use the resources as well as I could have or should have. Mm-hmm. And now it's kind of all there. We didn't have social media and access to all these people putting videos up and things like that. So, yeah, I definitely think the athletes are getting bigger, stronger, seeking and using more resources available to their diets. You know, I don't remember ever having a six-pack, and I'm certainly never going to put my current lack of six-pack on Instagram like these girls do. They're very proud of themselves.
You're not on TikTok,
and good on them for it, you know. It's great to see, you know, that. But they're taking their approach across all aspects, whether it be, again, at students of the game, diet, mental health, you know, skill development. There's so many different pillars and components that they are actually approaching. And they earn more money as well, so they can, you know, afford to do those things. They don't have to work jobs like we did back in the day. You know, and that was one of the benefits of going to college as well, is it was all incorporated in my time over there. As I know, when people stayed in Australia, it was like you worked a full-time job, you had to fit training in, trying to fit weights in. You know, there's an opportunity to do that more than what we were able to do.
What was the big shift coming back to play WNBL after the WNBA experience? Obviously, the Balling Boomers at the time, and this is pretty much where I exit stage left because I have limited knowledge on this compared to the two of you. What was it like, the shift coming back?
I don't know. Well, I guess we went from playing, you know, I went from playing big stadiums and sort of professional outfit to, you know, we're playing out of the Veneto Club, you know, which was a great, I actually really loved the court at the Veneto Club because of the depth perception, and I felt like it was a, you know, good stadium for a shooter. But yeah, obviously, you know, we play in front of 100, maybe 200 people, and you know, we've gone from, I think we played Tennessee in college where we had 10,000, you know, fans watching. So, you know, back in probably early 2000s when I did come back, it was a very big shift and change. But it was still community based and playing with your friends, and we played for each other, and we, you know, we didn't play for the money, we played for the passion and for the love of the game and wanting to be with our teammates. So, you know, a bit of give and take on some of it, but I don't have any regrets in staying and playing for Bulleen because obviously I've got some great friends out of it, and we had some really good success, and I think we helped, you know, where they're at now, part of that transition.
Absolutely. And a little bit of a full circle type thing as well, played for Cheryl Chambers. And have now taken over Cheryl's job at Sydney Uni as well. What was that like playing for Cheryl and the linkages between that and Sydney?
Yeah, it's not what you know, it's who you know. no, Cheryl, you know, Cheryl's biggest, I think, asset as a coach is that, you know, she's a player's coach, and she instills confidence in you and, you know, allows you to be who you are and, you know, be the best basketballer that you can be within the team dynamics. So I think that worked in my favour as a player because I was a confidence player. So I sort of feel like I bring that as well as a coach. I think it's important that you make the environment safe for everyone while also, you know, holding everyone accountable to be the best person and athlete that they can be. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of professional development during this time, and I guess my biggest thing is learning different people's personalities, and that's also an evolution of, you know, learning to adapt as a coach to the different styles, teaching styles that you need to have to get the best out of your athletes. So that's a journey, and that's going to be ongoing. I'm not known for my tolerance at times, so I'm trying to work on certain things.
Been on the end of that a couple of times.
Well, sometimes it wasn't a good shot, Zozo.
Was always a good shot, Frog, let's be honest. But I guess while you were playing, did you know that you wanted to transition into coaching?
Yeah, I think so. I think whether it was coaching or teaching, I'd done a teaching degree in college in the States, and you know, I think you kind of end up on a pathway. And so my pathway took me into playing professionally. Again, how informed was I back then of all the different things I could do with playing WNBL, WNBA, going to Europe? You know, I always had aspirations to play for Australia. So yeah, I just followed sort of the pathway and the journey that basketball took me on, and knew, you know, education was important, and having something to fall back on when my career was over was important. And I did actually try to get into the fire brigade, but I slipped over on the fitness test. So I had to wait 12 months. So while I was waiting, I did my diploma of education for 12 months and found myself teaching at Ivanhoe Grammar, and it was a really good fit. with being the head basketball coach, sports coordinator, and then, yeah, it just seemed like a natural progression to move, you know, into coaching and try to get to the highest level as a coach.
How much has your teaching background helped with your coaching, just in how your athletes learn, how you need to deliver messages and things like that? Has that been a really key part for you?
Oh, absolutely. I just think, you know, having that life experience, because it's just even managing people, you know, and as teachers, you've got to manage kids, you've got to manage parents, you've got to, you know, different staff, you know, principals. So I think it was really helpful and important that I didn't actually just go from playing, for some people can do it, but from playing to coaching, because I think those are some important skills you have to learn. And through that experience, I think it's made me probably maybe progress a little bit quicker up the chain to a WNBL coach. I think those skill sets have helped in this position now to get to this point.
Now that you've been doing it for a little while, do you have a preference for coaching juniors or seniors, or what are the differences you find between the two of them?
I enjoy both, actually. I kind of, you know, it's great to be at this level, and it's probably a little less teaching, more, again, people management and motivation and sort of just getting team culture and working together, because a lot of the girls come in with the skill set. Yes, there's still development. You've got to work on some of those aspects, but most of them have that. So X's and O's, how do we find the best shot? How can we, you know, get wins? Whereas I think at the junior level, particularly when I went in as an assistant coach with under 16 state team, and that was one of my first coaching roles, was really great for me to see the importance of teaching and how to teach and how to teach the fundamentals, and see over a really like 6 to 9 month period how much the kids could grow and progress and get better in such a short period. So, you know, I think there's benefits to both. And I do miss the teaching at that level side of things, but I enjoy coaching at this level with senior athletes and at the professional level.
Yeah, that plays into you as a player too. Like, as a player, this is the only thing I can say that we had similar aspects to our game, in that we weren't like the most athletic, we weren't the tallest, we weren't, you know, the quickest or anything like that. So having to think your way through games. And so I think that's why, probably a connection to why, you know, X's and O's and gameplay and that sort of stuff with the older athletes is something you enjoy the most, because you spent your entire career doing that as a player. Because if you didn't, it would have been pretty difficult for you to achieve what you did achieve.
Yeah, and it's important for me to have those athletes as well with higher, you know, high IQs that understand the game. You know, some coaches look for long athletes. For me, it's, you know, how well do they know the game? How well do they see the game, read the game? And, you know, how professional are they in their approach? And wanting to be the best athlete and person that they can be. So, yeah, very important, obviously, for me, because I didn't have those attributes.
Preach.
I'll be honest. All I had was good footwork.
Would thinking back, would Frog the player like to play for Frog the coach at the moment?
I think so, yeah, I would actually. I think, am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, yeah.
And okay. I think I do believe I'm a player's coach, and I know as a player I always wanted to be challenged and to be made better, but without being scolded or belittled. And I think that's the important part, is the delivery of how do you make athletes better at any level. You know, there's a fine line these days, and the days of old where you know, could berate and, you know, belittle and yell at people is long gone, and necessarily long gone as well. I don't think that's how I responded to coaches. And I know when I had my success, it was under the type of coach that I think I'm becoming, because, you know, obviously they still mentor me, and I have those relationships and responded to the way they coach. So it's only natural for me to probably take a similar approach and have learned from them.
Sense. Do you find that you recruit players similar to you? Like, when you sort of think back as you were a player, when you're looking around the league at the moment and thinking, I need to put a team together for this season, do you identify with certain players coming through at the moment and think, that's who I want to have because that's what I was as a player and that's how I'm going to coach them?
Yeah, for me, I think ultimately it comes down to your work ethic and attitude. Those are two of the most important things, because I don't want to be coaching. If I have to coach that at this level, then I don't know how you got here or why you are here, you know, it's your job. So those are two things that, you know, are very important to me and make me very unhappy as a coach if I don't see those. And, you know, some days you have good days, some days you have bad days, and I get that. But you are in a team sport and team environment, and you are accountable to each other. So those are two things I think are important as athletes that you need to take care of. And I think you see the successful ones have those. You know, you look at the Sue Birds and, you know, the list could go on. That's why they are at the level they are, because those are the two traits, I think, that they carry and are important to have. So, yeah, physically, no, I don't think I look like any of the athletes I've recruited. I can't say, you know, I've got Schwagmeyer coming, so she's, you know, I respect her for she lost 10 kilos of fat before last season and had an amazing season and works her butt off. You know, you see videos on Instagram of her and her husband working out. You know, same Laura Mansfield. And perhaps players that are looking for opportunities to – I was never an established opal. That was always a dream, and I understand the challenges of trying to break through and get into that. So, you know, I target athletes that are hungry to achieve that because I know they're going to do whatever it takes to get themselves in a position to try and be an opal or whatever success they want.
So when you are recruiting, what are some of the first questions you would ask a player as you meet with them to say, look, we have interest in signing you? What are you looking for straight away? What would you ask them?
Oh, I feel like it's speed dating. I feel like we've just gone through a feeding frenzy with the free agency. I actually just have a general conversation about what they think their strengths and weaknesses are, what their goals are, what they're hoping to achieve. I try to find out, you know, a little about their family, about them as a person as well, and what sort of I guess I want them to fit into the culture that I'm looking for. Are they looking for leadership positions? And what does that look like for them? And yeah, I never make any promises around, you know, court time or starting positions. I just make it known that there is an opportunity there and it's yours if you want it and you're willing to put the work in and be coachable. And then, you know, I guess it's a part of it's off, you have to go off a bit of gut. You might do a little bit of research through other coaches or just to see, get some background information. So you kind of, it's kind of a bit of a broad at this level. A broad spectrum of doing some homework on it all as well.
And budgets matter. I mean, let's face it, it's easy when you've got an open checkbook, you can get whoever you want to get. Like, life is easy, but you know, the position you guys are in, you kind of have to money ball it a little bit more. And it's like, well, look, I don't have that level of money, but can I get what is worth one player into your cheaper players?
Well, you know, that's a whole other aspect as well. You know, we want to be professional in Australia, but we are still have athletes that have to, you know, minimum wage is 13. So, you know, it's also a bit of a test to see, well, are you chasing money or what is it you're actually after? So what are you willing to give up if I'm going to give, you know, to give you this, but I can't give you that. So, you know, that sometimes, you know, eliminates people or they eliminate themselves because of that. So, you know, I feel like we've got 10 players that came here for the right reasons this next season. So I'm excited by the people that we've recruited. I can't name them. We're doing them one by one each week.
I was going to say, we're getting a scoop or anything like that.
Yeah, but I feel like they've come for the right reasons in a year where it is a COVID year. Money was a bit tighter. There's no imports. And I think, you know, they've put their trust in me. So I'm gratefully putting it, we'll give it back to them.
Talking about you as a coach specifically, you know, you spent a lot of time being, I guess, a player that was revered in this country. You know, everyone knew Katrina Froggy Hibbert. But, you know, you're MVP of the league and, you know, that's nothing to sneeze at, to be honest. Did you have any challenges, though, when you decided that, yep, you were going to step into coaching and take your first coaching role? Were there any challenges that you found that you potentially weren't expecting?
I think the biggest, I coached Hume City, I played for Hume City, and then I stepped the next season into the coaching role. So I think there is a line between, because obviously I was friends with everyone and been on the court with them. So first thing I had to learn was I was no longer a player. So trying to control my emotions and reactions is something that it's an ongoing thing because I am an emotional and, you know, I wear my emotions on my sleeve and kind of I'm not very good at not showing how I'm feeling. So sometimes, you know, you do need that skill set. So I think that was one of the learning things for me. And I'm still continuing to learn to not be as reactive and be more controlled. And also, yes, you know, athletes, you know, you have a duty of care and you do genuinely care about them, but also you've got to keep that coach player sort of professionalism. And so that's been one of the things learning that I can relate to you. I'm a former player, but I'm also the coach and I do have to make decisions, even though I do refer to my athletes. And I think it's important to do that because they've all got different experiences with different coaches. But ultimately, you know, I need to be, you know, the leader and make the decisions that I think are best.
Yeah, for sure.
And have confidence in that.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's really easy as well as ex-players to be able to try and slide back into that team environment. It's absolutely a habit where you can get caught of being almost too friendly with your players.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then it comes to crunch time and you've got to look someone in the eye and basically call them out that they're not doing what they need to be doing. And now that line is blurred because, oh, well, I thought you were my friend. Well, no, I'm not your friend. I'm your coach. And I think that's a trap a lot of coaches, not just ex-players, but a lot of coaches fall into.
Well, and it is a fine line, particularly in today's society where, you know, back in the day you could just give that delivery in a nice sharp way. Mm. So it's also society's adjustment to how we can deliver those messages. And, yeah, so the lines are always going to be blurred and it's going to be different for each person. And I guess that's where we say player-coach relationships are important in building that trust, because when you do have to deliver that message, they know it comes from a place of, yeah, this isn't good enough. And their response is accountability back on them, not negativity of, oh, she's picking on me or, you know. So, yeah, trying to find that space is really difficult.
Yeah.
You know, as coaches, there's one of us with your assistant coaches, but you're managing 10 different personalities who have had 10 different life experiences and have 10 different ways of thinking things that should be done. You know, finding that balance is, let's face it, as we all know, impossible, and we're never going to win.
Yeah, and you hit on a massive one, I think, too, that player-coach relationship. So knowing a little bit more about that athlete, what makes them tick, what doesn't, you know, and even showing that you care about them, like you mentioned before, about finding out a little bit more about their family and things like that. So when it does come to, again, that time where you've got to give that rocket almost, then it's coming from a place of, oh, she cares about me or he cares about me, not he or she is just trying to get me to play well to make them look better or anything like that. They know that it's coming from a place of care, not just I feel like yelling at you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and, you know, we have pressures ourselves of win-losses and, you know, we're professionals. So, you know, if you're not doing the job on the court, well, the first person to go is the coach, not the athlete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the person who we hold accountable these days for everything. So, you know, we have those external pressures as well on ourselves to be seen as being successful in our profession.
How much accountability do you give to the players in that space as well? Like, would you allow a player to call out another player with that's not what we expect, or do you try and take the brunt of that yourself as a coach?
I think it has to be player-driven. A lot of it has to be. I think we, at pre-season, when we're building our team culture, we have to set the standard and expectation, and I think that goes into the players that you do recruit. But I think it's super important that the athletes hold each other accountable and say, no, that's not good enough, whether it be, you know, on social media, on court, around team rules that we put in. I think it's important that your leaders, you know, and that can be done in a way that doesn't have to be isolating or seen as bullying. It's just like, no, these are our team standards. That's not good enough. You know, I don't think that's unfair when you're playing a team sport. It should be exactly that.
Absolutely. I think then the role of the coach is to ensure that, you know, if an athlete has held another athlete accountable and that they haven't taken it all so well and they come and complain to the coach, standing strong on that and backing the athlete that has actually done what you want from them is to try and make it athlete-driven. It's tough at times because, you know, we're carers and if somebody's upset or whatever it might be, you want to try and help them. But at the end of the day, if that's the standard that you've set and that's something that you want for your group, you have to back that.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, building your team culture with your team rules and the leaders within your group. And then, you know, again, players are going to move on. So when your leaders move on, you want that next tier to say, hey, hang on, that's not good enough. It's like, you know, the Opals and, you know, what they stand for or stood for. You know, Michelle Timms, Robin Maher, what they expect of the Opals still stands because they were the ones who set the benchmarks of what it means to be an Opal. And so that continues on. So you want that culture to continue on and be driven by your athletes that are playing at that level or whatever, you know, team or club they're playing for. Otherwise, we sell ourselves out and we're going to be miserable anyway. So because you're fighting an endless battle, you know, because if you want your drive, if your players are driving it and that's your culture, then you can spend time doing the things that you really need to spend time on. Otherwise, if you're not true to your values and the team's value system, then it's you don't enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Makes sense. So a lot of time coaching at Hume City and then moved into the WNBL as an assistant coach. Difficult to make that adjustment from being a head coach at a big V level into an assistant coaching role where it's like, geez, I'm used to having control of what's going on and now I almost have to take a little bit of a back seat?
No, because I think I'm humble and enough that I needed to learn. And I wanted to learn. So I knew I wasn't ready, but I was excited to be back at that level to learn, to prepare myself to be ready. So, you know, like when you stop playing, all of a sudden you've got to do scouts and game plans. And it's like, well, as a player, you never appreciated actually the amount of time that
that just got handed to you.
Got handed to you miraculously. And, you know, where did they get this from? The basketball fairies just came and handed it to them. So I don't think, you know, I had to teach myself how to do video scouts, paper scouts. You know, I would ask my former college coaches, what programs do you use that can help me be more effective? So I had so much to learn, and I still do, to be quite honest. So, yeah, going onto a WNBL bench and seeing it ran from the coach's perspective was a super learning opportunity for me to understand the process. And guys are very, you know, fundamental, keep it simple. Coach, and he's been coaching for, gosh, 20, 30 years. So, you know, to learn from somebody who has coached at that level for so long, you know, the ins and outs of how he approaches things and the methodical way he does things was a great opportunity for me to learn from.
So in that assistant coaching role, what would you say the balance was between your on-court hours versus your off-court hours? Like how many hours per week did you put into things getting right away from the actual training sessions and the games themselves?
At WNBL as assistant or head?
Yeah, at WNBL as an assistant coach.
Well, I mean, I was working a full-time job at Ivanhoe Grammar as a teacher, doing Saturday morning sport, doing some state coaching. So I was very fortunate that Ivanhoe was very encouraging and supportive of my assistant coach role. They, you know, they saw the benefits and encouraged it for me. So I would be able to go to trainings because trainings were, you know, 9 to 12. So they were flexible in my teaching load and, you know, making my hours up after school hours and things like that. So I was very fortunate. But, yeah, we were training on court 2 to 3 times a week for a couple of hours. And then when you put in, you know, doing scouts, paper scouts, video scouts, it would just be endless hours after, you know, till 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, just making sure you're doing your, you know, fulfilling your role with the team and with the group, so you've got that next scout ready and always looking ahead and planning ahead. So, you know, planning and preparation is just endless hours that people don't see that goes into the actual 40 minutes of basketball, no matter what role, you know. My assistant coaches this year, they will work full-time jobs, have got families, Hannah got married, Tom got really sick, they were both doing under-20s on top of, you know, doing opposition scouts as well in between.
Did you find there was a difference between the scout you would do as an assistant coach and the scout you would do for yourself, say, as a head coach?
Yeah, so I would try and focus on us, but I did also like to make sure I was all over the opposition scout, obviously, because I'm a control freak and I like to see everything and, you know, well, just be best prepared for the game. So, but, yeah, our scout would just be areas that we need to improve, whether it be setting better screens, missed opportunities or lots of positives that we might be able to find that we played well but we just might not have gotten the win or what we did well to get the win. So, you know, I think sometimes you can do too much video, sometimes you can not do enough. So it varied throughout the season based on, you know, the vibe or that I felt we needed, you know, for the team. It would just vary depending on what I felt like we needed or the group was going to be responsive to as well. Because there's no point in smashing them after a loss. You know, it just makes the week longer and sometimes you just got to find the positives and move on.
Yep.
With the things like video, what do you find the balance between them wanting to watch themselves and their own correction versus wanting to watch the potential upcoming scout?
Well, I think that's one of our biggest challenges, to be honest. I don't think the girls, not all the girls, watch enough video scout. I don't think they watch enough basketball in general to be better students of the game. So, you know, I think if you want to be an Australian player and you want to be an Opal, and you've got to be watching the WNBA. You're going to be watching the best athletes, female athletes, or, you know, male athletes, and looking at where the game's going and what you need to be doing to your game to develop, to compete against them, because that's the only way we're going to ever beat America at an Olympics, or is by watching, you know, Deladon at 6'5". She's playing off the dribble, back to the basket. She can do everything. At 6'5" now, you can't just be, you know, a post player. You've got to have a full skill set. You know, same with guards. You know, you got to be quick. You got to be able to guard one-on-one, stay in front of the ball. So I think for the women's game, it's about being a better student of being willing to watch yourself, good and bad, and take criticism and put things into practice, and consistently just get on the court and play one-on-one to get better.
We have it's a mentality we're trying to change at a junior level, especially with female athletes. We're so result-driven and we forget about process. So, like, for instance, we had some sessions last week with VMPP on court, and we were doing shooting, and a couple of our female athletes would miss some shots, and it was like the world had fallen out from underneath them. Their shoulders dropped, their heads dropped, they were apologizing, they were, you know, oh, I was making all of these shots yesterday. And it's, hey, don't worry about that. While you're thinking about all of these things, you're not fixing what needs to be fixed. So forget about that. And it needs to be about the process. And I think when it comes to film and things like that, when we can get caught as female athletes taking it a little too personally, like you're being picked on, instead of taking it as, again, it's coming from a place of care, it's coming from a place of trying to improve and make them better so they can progress to whatever they want to progress to. And that might just be going from a bench player to a starter, or a DP to a rostered spot, or something like that. So I think it's definitely a culture we need to change across the board with our female athletes of, don't take it personally, it's to help you get better.
Yeah, and I think also it's a societal issue, because there's obviously a higher dropout rate of girls around that age group of 14. And I think for me, you know, when I was younger, I was told I was too fat, too slow. And I think we hear those messages, and as girls, we're not very good at processing that. So I always had that issue in the back of my mind and never wanted to watch myself. I didn't want to see myself. Even when I was, you know, winning MVPs or whatever, it was like, oh, you know, I look fat in this bodysuit, or like I was never felt like I was skinny enough, fast enough. So I think it's in the, you know, the messages that we need to change to girls, and maybe show more videos so that they're seeing themselves earlier and becoming comfortable with it, and not constantly. But I think that's a big society issue as well, in building girls' self-esteem and self-love and just acceptance and, you know.
It's a difficult one.
Thank God we don't play in bodysuits anymore.
Well, or coach, for that matter. It's, there are a lot of coaches that are pretty happy about that, myself included, that we haven't had to go to that point. But how do you go about delivering a message potentially to an athlete that maybe is a little bit slower foot, or just not athletic enough? Because we do have a lot of coaches that are actually male athletes, and that can be a really confronting message for a lot of females to be told by a male coach that's usually a fair bit older, you're out of shape. Like, what are the best ways to potentially deliver that message to?
Well, I think, again, this is where you look at probably process of how do I get them fitter, or what can I do to help them? So, you know, I was always slow anyway, so it doesn't matter. But, you know, can you put benchmarks in place for them so that they can see that there's improvements? You know, can you show them video in a safe space where, you know, it might just be yourself and you get a female assistant coach, or, you know, another female in the room to talk about something? You know, it doesn't, try and put it in a positive try and put a positive spin on it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, particularly in terms of those spaces for girls. I mean, I don't know. Do you have any other suggestions?
Well, I suppose for mine, I had an encounter like this with an athlete, and instead of making it about weight, I made it about fitness. So I said, I don't care what you look like. All I care about is that you are the fittest version of yourself. Now, if they're the fittest version of themselves, the weight will take care of itself. So that taking it away from body image and what is generally a negative for females and putting it into performance and athletic, then I think you get a better response.
Well, I think we also have to keep an open mind of are they performing on the court? And if that's the best version that they can get themselves into, then why do we need you super skinny? Or, you know, do you lose strength if you become too skinny? Or, you know, so, yeah, I agree. It's like just be the best version of yourself to put yourself in a position to succeed. What does that look like for you? What does that feel like for you?
Yeah.
Not necessarily, oh, you're too fat, you're too this, you're too – okay, well, what is best for you? And it has to be very individual, and everybody's different. We have to accept everybody's different. Everybody has different diets. You're dealing with vegans, vegetarians, meat lovers, you know, and we all have to adjust. Allergies, intolerances. So, you know, everyone's diet's different, and how can we help get their diet right? Because they might not have the education around it as well, if that's what we're approaching. It doesn't have to be weight. Obviously, it's always been an issue for you, for us, so that's what we're trying to focus on.
Bit of a tangent. After your WNBL experience with the Boomers, jumped into the junior NBA landscape. How did that come about? What did that look like for you? Like, how did it all go?
Well, funnily enough, Basketball Australia asked me to take some Australian, I think five or six Australian athletes over to India to a Basketball Without Borders camp for 3 or 4 days. And I met Carlos Borroca, who I think is the vice president of the junior NBA in Southeast Asia. And we kind of hit it off, and he's a chatty Portuguese guy and I'm a chatty Australian lass. And while I was sort of in negotiations and talking to Melbourne Boomers about moving into more of a full-time assistant coach position, he offered me an opportunity to go over to Southeast Asia and work for the junior NBA and live in Indonesia and Vietnam and go to Thailand, and just seemed like I was feeling a bit, I'd been teaching for 8 years and was just looking for just somehow to break out and try something different. I'm a bit of a nomad. I like to do different things at different times, and I've done that throughout my career. So just seemed like a really good opportunity for me to grow and experience something different, and hadn't done anything in Southeast Asia. So opportunity came up, and, you know, like we'd be in stadiums in 40-degree heat, no air conditioning, 2,000 to 3,000 teachers, because we were teaching them the junior NBA curriculum, and we're all mic'd up. And it was like, I've always said in another life I'd like to come back as Robbie Williams or Pink, but it was as a rock star on a stage. But it was similar in that aspect, because we were in front of these people in these, you know, NBA, junior NBA self-made courts, surrounded by teachers in a big stadium, mic'd up, you know, getting the crowd all G'd up and, you know, teaching the teachers how to teach basketball and getting them excited about basketball in Southeast Asia. And we'd always end the day with a song. What's the troll song?
Can't Stop the Feeling.
Yes, that feeling. And so we'd always finish the day and get all the teachers onto the floor, and everybody, we'd be up on the stage doing this big performance, mirroring different basketball, you know, defensive slides and shooting, and, you know, 4,000 teachers would be mirroring us and singing the song and finish on a high note. So in terms of confidence and just, you know, no care factor and just getting out there and having a, you know, good old time, it was a really great experience, and met some wonderful people, worked with some great Filipino coaches and Indonesians and Vietnamese.
And I suppose taking a lot of that confidence into applying for head coaching roles in the WNBL as well. That was the link back to Australia.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, I think another thing to put on your resume is as an experience that you've done and, you know, gets recognised. And not often WNBL coaching positions actually came up. So I thought, well, what have I got to lose? I'd only been gone for 6 months. And, missed one season. And, Shara Milner, who obviously Zoe and I played with, said, "Why don't you've got nothing to lose?" So, you know, she's been very good in sort of encouraging me to do things as one of my best mates. And so I was like, "Well, yeah, I have nothing to lose." And I applied for the Bendigo job. And I mean, as a former athlete, when I got my teaching position, I hadn't gone for a job interview. It kind of positioned opened up and it was mine. So I thought at worst, I learn how to go into a job interview and prepare for a job interview and learn to speak the language that's needed and required. And so I learned that, I think, through the Bendigo process, and which set me up. Then Sydney's position obviously came open, and that set me up to be prepared and I guess be better in my interview process and preparation for it.
So what was that process like, though? What was that process like? So, you know, it's, again, like you said, it's one of the very few interviews you've had to do. So it would have been daunting, I'm sure. But I guess for coaches that are listening, what are the sort of things that I guess you needed to prepare for?
Well, I mean, I had to put down, I guess, there was a selection criteria. So you've put your application in with your resume. So I had to get my resume redone and updated and modernized. And also, answer the selection criteria. And then I put that in, and then became an interview process. So I guess it was great because you have to put down your coaching philosophy, your coaching style. So you get to revisit all that, which is what I've been also doing through this process over COVID. So it's always good to revisit that and rethink, oh, where am I at now? How have I developed? What other things can I learn as well? So I got to the interview stage. I think there were five of us. And then, so you sit through a bunch of questions. It was through Skype because I was in Indonesia at the time. So I think that probably helped a little take away that nervousness being in that space when you're actually sitting in a room with people. But, I think the people who were in the interview did a really good job of making it feel comfortable and safe, and I guess you just learn to answer the questions naturally and authentically, and then, you know, got invited back for another interview and did that, and then got a phone call an hour later saying we'd love for you to coach. But, yeah, so it's good. It was really good to learn, and I'm sure the next time I have to go for an interview I'll be better prepared, but still the nerves and doubt will be there.
So one of the, I guess, the first things you have to do once you gain a head coaching role is then assemble a staff. How did you go about doing that, especially in another state where, you know, you're Melbourne born and bred, Diamond Creek represent.
We are Creekers.
Shout out to Diamond Valley College. but you move to another state where here you have a massive basketball network, and then you move to another state and, yes, you know people in the other state, but the network's not quite as strong. So how did you go about putting that staff together?
Well, I guess it came – I was advised by Karen Dalton, who's obviously the GM and has been here for a while. So there were some connections and people, you know, people sent in resumes looking for opportunities, and I met with a few people, and I wanted somebody also who I worked with before who knew what I was like as a coach and sort of what I would be looking for. So Hannah Lowe commuted from Victoria because we'd done a lot of state teams and Hume City together. So it was nice to have that one person that I had worked with before that I could use as a, you know, sounding board and based on our previous experiences. And then Tom Garlop had just finished playing with the Kings and was coaching in the girls' space and wanted to have that opportunity. And I just met up with him, and a lot of people had spoken highly of him. So just seemed to work out well. And yeah, it's worked out really well. I thought we had a really great working relationship, as well as, you know, got along really well off the court, which is just as important, particularly, you know, you travel with each other and, you know, we all want to be going in the same direction and delivering the same messages. And so had some really great buy-in from those guys and support from them as well.
How do you go about assigning their roles? So is that something you just basically you make that decision yourself because that's what you need, or do you allow them to have input on what their roles are as an assistant coach? Like, how do you go about getting them to give you what you need but also with their strengths?
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a learning curve that I need to be better at this season, and I think I will be. But they sort of found their roles a little bit, sort of with some guidance of like, I need this, this and this, and then they sort of made it their own within the group. And then, yeah, I let them work together and communicate together in terms of scouting. So some, you know, Tom would do three teams, Hannah did four. And then, yeah, it's obviously, again, it's really difficult because they weren't full-time. So a lot of the times I would be at trains, you know, Tom would come, but Hannah would be down in Melbourne. So, you know, at times she could come up and back. So it was a really difficult space to navigate. Might be a little bit different this year. Still got to look at that right now in terms of who the assistants will be and how that fits into the budget going forward for this season. But, yeah, like, again, that's something that, you know, I've kind of need to be better at, I think, going into this season that I've learned over this COVID period.
How have you found the difference going from an assistant coaching role into a head coaching role? Like, what are the things you're responsible for now that you probably weren't responsible for when you're an assistant coach?
Probably everything. well, I get, you know, head, well, you make the decisions and the buck stops with you. Team meetings, you know, what's going to be delivered, how do you deliver it? You know, what's important, individual meetings, meeting with your leaders. Yeah, again, it's around, you know, training, planning trainings. What do you need? What do we need to address in trainings? What's more important, picking and choosing what we do actually need to focus on, because you can't, you know, as much as we try, we want to fix everything, you just can't. So, yeah, so pretty much everything. You know, team managers obviously, you know, and GM do a lot of the travel stuff, but everything sort of goes through the coach as well. So, yeah, so, you know, again, it's all just working collaboratively with the general manager, team manager, assistant coaches, just making sure we're communicating. We always had a medical meeting on Monday with the strength and conditioning coach, the physio and the team doctor with the GM, and just touched base just to see where each athlete was after the weekend. Has anyone been in? What sort of injuries? Does it need to be a light week in terms of weights and training? So, yeah, just a lot of collaboration with everyone in their different spaces just to make sure we're all on the same page.
Was it what you'd expected, being a head coach for the first time? Is this what you thought it would be like as a head coach?
I don't know. Like, it's kind of like the WNBA. Is it what I expected? Like, you kind of just, you do it and then that's there. So, no, I love it. I really love it. I love the flexibility. You know, we have trainings, but there's flexibility throughout the day to do, you know, training preparation or video scouts or watch video and things like that. So I guess when you come from a teaching background, when you live your life to bells and when you can eat and can't eat, you know, it's nice to, you know, I'm not looking after five, six different classes and 10 different teams. I can just focus on this one group to try and achieve something together. So I really enjoyed it from that aspect as well. But, yeah, there's lots, yeah, like it's not just about the X's and O's. There's so much more that goes on behind the scenes, it's great. It's, you know, you learn in every component and every area. Like, I'm learning about strength and conditioning, you know, light loads, higher loads, how do we prepare, macro planning, micro planning, all that sort of stuff. So it's I enjoy it. I think it's great.
Awesome. A little bit of a change all of a sudden. You've gone through a season, you've had to coach against Cheryl, who coached you. You've had to coach against Guy Malloy, who you assisted. How do you prepare differently for those situations? Are they just another game, or is it a little bit more to those?
No, not at all. No, it's just another game. Obviously, I want to beat them, but I want to beat everyone. So, but, you know, it's funny because you do, I guess, you know, I know Guy's very, he won't change up much defensively. He's sort of very strict on his rules, and probably something that I had to, I didn't understand maybe when I was his assistant, but I understand a little bit more now as a head coach. That, you know, you can't every week try and be in drops and then you're trapping and then, you know, it's better to be consistent with your defensive rules. So you kind of know what you're going to expect. And same offensively as well with Guy, but, you know, again, he's a great teacher of the game, and that breakdown that you know they're going to be very well executed when you play against them, and they're going to compete and they're going to play hard for 40 minutes. So you know what you're going to expect. And then Cheryl, you know, I think I saw some offenses that I remember we were running. you know, but successful offenses, just different players that she's put in the same position to succeed within her offenses. So I guess you go in having a better understanding of how they coach and how they see and think the game. So that I think probably helps a little bit more because you know their history and what's important to them and their coaching style. Although I did win. I didn't beat Guy, but I did get Cheryl once.
And you're just holding on to that, aren't you?
I am holding on to it. Yeah.
Not many got the Flyers last year, so take that one. No question.
Thank you very much.
How has this...
it was costly, but anyway.
How has this, I guess, COVID situation changed the way you're preparing for this season?
Well, Victoria going lockdown, we've got four Victorians coming up. So the girls were training and starting to get fit and doing a lot of three-on-three. So I guess I will have to be mindful around how they're prepared coming in, because their fitness will be different again and their mental state will also be different again. Same for you guys, having to adjust to another 6 weeks lockdown. So fingers crossed the rest of Australia doesn't suffer what you guys are actually going through right now. You know, the girls are professional, so their approach would be just to stay as fit as possible and hopefully start watching WNBA and start watching some basketball in this time. It's been a little bit frustrating because free agency started later. There's no imports, you know, so it's a great opportunity for a lot of Australian athletes. I think it's great for building the depth of Australian basketball. I think we've got some older opals that might be, you know, in the next year or two after Worlds might be a bit of a transition into younger, newer opals. So I think it's giving, you know, we've just signed Funda Nakasoglu. I'm not going to say it correctly ever.
That's not bad, though.
She's been, yeah. What's that?
That's not bad, though. Like, you've done pretty well there. There's a lot of letters in that surname.
I know. I'll just call her Funda Nak. So, you know, she's been over in college, played a season in Turkey. So a lot of Australian athletes that have been out of the country for a while returning that we, you know, may have been forgotten or just need that opportunity. And without imports this season, that opportunity is there. So who knows, maybe be recognised and seen by Opal's coaches, because I think three assistants are in the league, Sandy as well, and, you know, what that might provide opportunities and pathways into the Opals, the Australian team for them as well. But, yeah, it's been challenging and, you know, it was a bit of a feeding frenzy because a lot of girls were going on the free agency list. Again, that's part of that. Everyone's looking for change and opportunity. And I think this season would have seen a lot of more girls on the free agency list than probably in previous years. And as we say, you know, a lot of the teams that do have success don't have a high turnover of athletes. So hopefully we've signed several for 2 years and we can start to build what I'd like to build here.
Do you think, or will the no import rule have any effect on your style of play?
No, I mean, I'll have to make some adjustments to some of the athletes to the players that we do have. But no, I'm happy with the squad that we've got. I think we've got some great hardworking athletes. We've got some smaller guards. We've got some great height. I think the front court, in particular, won't be as big because obviously, you know, beyond if Lizzie's playing for Southside, which is rumored to be. The league then drops pretty much to 6'5". So I think you'll see a smaller, faster league for a lot of the season. I think the front court it will be the challenge for a lot of teams. How do you match up with 6'8"? But I think it's going to be a really fun season to see different Australian players, see what they can do to step up and see an opportunity. The Olympics is next year, so if somebody has a standout season, who's to say what can't happen for them?
Is there anything you've learned as a coach you wish you knew as a player?
Everything. I think I look back and I'm like, gosh, maybe we should all coach and we should all ref before we actually, as players, because, I think you become a little more compassionate and a bit more empathy because you're on the other side of things rather than being, you know, that athlete that's competitive and just wants to go out and win. And so I think, patience is one thing. I think I'm learning to be patient and I probably needed that more as an athlete. And Zoe probably agree with that. And, and I think understanding that it is a little more understanding to coaches in terms of managing different personalities because people are different. So I'm learning that as a coach. I think that, you know, again, why aren't you yelling at that person? We know that person's not blocking out, but sometimes that person... Yeah, it's conversations that we have off the court that athletes don't see because sometimes, you know, that's not the person to yell at or, you know, approach at that time. And so learning those, that skill set, I think, has been a big learning curve for me.
Awesome.
Any advice for any coaches looking to advance in their pathway? Like, what would you recommend for any coach to do at any level?
I just think ask for help, talk to people, find mentors, find networks. I think that's sort of how you get ahead and learn from different people. But also, you know, I've spoken, like, just from meeting Carlos in India and just, you know, having a chat and just being friendly and created the opportunity to go to junior MBA. And, yeah, so I think it's important you just keep networking, ask people. I think people are afraid to ask. And I think if you don't ask, I mean, you're losing more than just getting a no back in return, because sometimes it's just that, you know, somebody hasn't asked the question. And so I think most of my opportunities have just been from talking to people. I probably talk too much, but talking to people, you know, I go watch a basketball game and I think I spend the whole time sitting there talking to people and catching up. And I think, you know, those are the ways that you do build connections and networks. So, and then if an opportunity comes up, don't be afraid to take it, because I don't think think we're ready. Well, some people probably think they are, but most of us, you know, put yourself in a position to learn and succeed. That's all you can do. I'm not an expert. I don't think I've still got so much to learn. I think me in 10 years is going to be a very different person and coach to the person I am now because of my experiences and wherever it takes me.
It's a pretty good answer.
Very good answer.
Yeah, that's not bad. That wraps it up
I am not my win or loss record.
We don't want anyone to be judged on those. Sometimes they're out of our control.
They are.
But from us, big thanks for jumping on the podcast today. We understand that we are, you know, the lockdown state at the moment, and it's a little difficult. So hopefully this has been a great resource for a lot of our coaches. But best of luck for this upcoming season. I hope to see you guys go really well.
Thank you.
And good luck with everything going on.
I appreciate it, and hopefully you can get across the border and watch some games in the future.
Big thanks to Frog for jumping on the podcast. It's she's in a really weird spot at the moment, where she's a coach with half a team and not all her players at the moment. Some are still stuck in Victoria, and she was just saying that she managed to get out of Dodge really quickly on the Sunday before everything got locked down, so she was able to get back up to Sydney. And I apologise for jumping in on what is usually your tie night catch-ups with Frog as well over Zoom.
A dear, dear friend of mine and has been for a lot of years, but I think my biggest takeaway from what she had to say was she knows that there are weaknesses in her coaching or things that she needs to do better, and she's not only acknowledged it, but she's also publicly acknowledged it in this forum, and I'm sure if you spoke to her face-to-face, she'd be the same. She's just an absolute genuine soul and a genuine coach, and the bravery to say, I need to do better at that, out into the, I guess, universe for other people to hear.
The massive talking split audience
there
that
you
there
go.
Is.
Yeah, we're taking over the world. But for her, for the bravery to do that is huge. A lot of the time we want to put up this wall or this perception to other coaches that we're right on top of it. We know everything that we need to know, and we're good to go. And for her to be able to say, look, I need to be better at that, and it's something I need to work on next season, I think is huge and a really big lesson for a lot of our coaches.
Well, and even she touched on the point of she's looking at everything she's done over the years as well. Like, she's using this downtime that she's had as a way of reflecting on, what's my coaching philosophy? How has it changed? How can it be adapted? Where does it sit now? And that's something I think a lot of our coaches can be doing in this time, is now's a great time for some self-reflection. Like, yeah. What have I done well? What could I do potentially better? And then actioning it. So where am I going for this? So she's identified some areas that she sort of thinks, well, okay, I can be better at. And she's working on trying to find some PD and some ways to upskill in those areas as well, which I think is really valuable. And if WNBL coaches or head coaches are able to do that, there's no reason why we as volunteer type coaches shouldn't be able to do that as well.
Yeah, well, and this is two pro coaches we've had in a row, like with Bevo a couple of weeks ago and now Frog, who have both basically made the statement of, you never stop learning and you never stop evolving and you need to continue to work and grow as a coach. And, you know, they're two people that you would perceive to be at the top of their field because they're coaching in our national leagues. So, I just think it's fantastic, a fantastic message that, you know, even if you've got the goal, whether it be to coach a first team, to coach a state team, to coach in the NBL, to get on an Oz bench, whatever that your goal might be, there is still always time and effort that needs to go into you as a coach.
Absolutely. So big thanks to Katrina Hibbert for jumping on, and best of luck with the season with the Sydney Uni Flames. Coaches, thanks very much for jumping into the podcast. As always, if you're able to throw us a rating, review, all those kinds of things that I continually ask for, I do appreciate it. It's always nice looking through the comments and people that reach out on Twitter and the throw us the like and things like that. So we do see you. We do appreciate it a lot. And thanks very much for the feedback we get on the podcast as well. So it doesn't go unnoticed, I can assure you. Coaches, stay safe, stay healthy. As always, do the right thing for the next however long we're in this lockdown. Hopefully it's not 6 weeks, but hey, if it is, we're cool. Hibernation, bears in winter, that sort of thing. They managed to get through it. We should be okay. So big thanks to everyone that does listen. Stay safe and healthy, and we'll hopefully see you all very soon.